I'm Nina Porzucchi, and you are listening to The World in Words. And I'm back in the studio with Patrick.
Hi, Nina.
Hey, Patrick. So I wanted to play you a bit of We Don't Need the English from the LA punk band Bags. And I promise it's not a dig at you. But last week...
That would be fine.
Yeah, well, last week we talked about the pop punk accent, you know, that exaggerated Southern California voice of Tom DeLonge, the former lead singer of Blink-182. And I must admit, I am no expert in music. I'm not claiming to be an expert in music, but thanks to all of our listeners, I was reminded of some other early California punk bands that we did not mention, like Bags and X and Social D or Social Distortion. Please, everybody out there, keep the comments coming. I love learning new stuff from all of you. And this week, we are going to continue our exploration into accents and music, except instead of an exaggerated accent, this week we wanted to explore how musicians adopt different accents when they sing. And there is the classic example.
Yeah, that's great. That's the Rolling Stones from Exile on Main Street. I think that that album, like almost from beginning to end, if you played it and you didn't know they were from the UK, you'd never guess it.
I mean,
they don't just sound American, they sound African American.
Yes, they definitely do. You would never, ever know. In fact, for a long time, I think I thought that the Rolling Stones were an American band. Isn't that terrible?
but for all of that, I don't know what it is. They're going for a sort of authenticity there, right? I mean, it's this weird authenticity because we know otherwise they don't speak that way. They're taking on this completely alien sound. There's nothing
British about it at all.
There's nothing British about it. But somehow in their world at that time, they're going for an authenticity that they felt that they clearly felt that they couldn't do just by being kind of whimsically British, like, say, the Kinks or something like that.
Hmm. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about authenticity in the podcast. But first, for this edition, I wanted to invite another special guest into the studio. He is our resident music head here in the newsroom.
And he's here.
And he's here.
Look, the door opens and I come in.
Oh, my gosh, Marco! He's back.
Greetings.
Well, thanks for joining us here.
It's a pleasure.
In the studio. Okay, Patrick, Marco, to kick things off today, I'm going to both put you to the test. I have a few songs, four to be exact, and you have to guess where the musicians are from just by their accent. So we're going to play a clip of the song, and then I want you to guess, and then I'm going to play them speaking.
Great. I love games like this.
Okay. So, Mike.
I don't stand a chance against you, Marco.
Not true. You'll know the Brits and the punkers, right?
This was some crowdsourced material. I went to Facebook. I asked a lot of people. Yeah. Okay, so Mike the engineer, if you hit song one. Jealousy, turning saints into the scene, turning for sick lullabies, choking on your alibis, but it's just the price I pay.
I'm going to guess Ireland. I don't know who that band was. I probably should, but right?
I have no clue, but yeah, it sounds certainly British Isles.
Yeah, I was going to say British Isles, but I think there's something about the slightly minor key thing that I feel like it's an
Irish
or maybe Scottish band.
Okay, Mike, yeah, I want you to play voice one.
Hello, my name is Brandon Flowers. I sort of tend to get in the same, I don't want to call it a rut, but sometimes it becomes a rut where you're just doing the same thing over and over.
So that
I meant Ireland, Michigan.
There's a Dublin in 16 states or something like that. Right?
Or you meant Ireland, Las Vegas. So this is The Killers. It's an American band from Las Vegas.
Sure.
Lead singer is Brandon Flowers from Henderson, Nevada.
Wow. Well, there you go. clearly, they have some local accents there in Henderson, Nevada.
I know.
I think this is a big setup. Nina, let's hear the other
three. Okay. All right. This one takes a little to get into.
We are proud individuals living for the city.
There's something slight, I'm going to say German. There's something slightly guttural and a few of the syllables. I don't know. It's
German.
It's not American. It's not British Isles. German or Australia.
It could be one of those. It's somebody trying to sound American who's not American, right? I was going to say maybe African. Maybe somewhere from Anglophone Africa.
Could be like South Africa, maybe.
Sudan, something. You know, somebody but trying to ape another accent.
Okay, you go with Africa, Patrick. Somewhere in Africa. I'm going to go with either Germany. I'll go with Germany.
Okay, on one all right. Let's hear him.
Yeah, I will. Thanks. It's an album. This is there. It ended up being 13 songs, which...
It's Scottish. And there's a twist in it. It's Paolo Nutini.
Oh, Paolo Nutini.
Who's Scottish and Italian.
Yeah. Of Italian descent.
And
that's
which
right.
Which is kind of like, that one kind of shocked me.
Well, Marco, we did really well then.
We already have a failing grade.
Yeah, you're like 0-2, right? So the third one, you're going to get this one. You've gone mad, I tell you, mad.
This boy Slim Shady, what's going on? They'll lock
you away, they'll put you in a jail cell.
Is this
Peaches? No. Come on, you know this.
Should we? It sounds like we should, Patrick.
I don't know. I mean, it could be like a B-side of an MIA song.
Well, no, this is... Oh, play it, Mikey, I don't want to give it away.
I never think I'm where I want to be, so it's
weird. Nicki Minaj?
I don't know if one day I'm going to
she's a master imitator chameleon.
Nicki Minaj. That is Roman's Revenge.
Brilliant.
That's her
alter persona. You've got to give us an easier one. This is horrible.
Well, maybe the last one. You're going to get the last one. It's
not Shaggy, is it? It's one of those dancehall guys. You know, once they got through reggae and they landed on dancehall, it was like, oh man, there's so many people to keep track of. All right, it's
Where's this guy from?
I was going to say this is Jamaican originally,
or
right?
Or South London.
That's what it is. It's either U.S. or U.K. I don't know. Yeah, there's maybe a little bit of London there. I don't know. He sounds a little like Tipper Irie, although he's got a lower voice.
Mm.
Okay, so London.
I'm going to say Kingston.
Kingston.
Because in my neighborhood, there's a lot of Jamaicans. So they're like, yo, Snow, they miss you in Jamaica. Yeah. And I say, yeah. And they're like, yeah. And I said, all right, boom.
That is Canadian. Darren Kenneth O'Brien from Toronto, Ontario, known a.k.a. as Snow. Do you remember that song, Informer? That's the song.
No, I don't remember that song.
Oh, man, that song is like high school.
Should have thought of Canada.
Commonwealth, right?
There's tons of Jamaicans.
Toronto, white dude.
0-4.
0-4.
I suck.
Oh, all right. You guys.
I'm right there with you.
Thank you so much, Marco, for coming.
It was a pleasure. This is a lot
studio.
Of fun.
And I'm sorry you didn't get any of that.
You don't have to remind me.
But you can maybe trick us at the end. I don't know. You have something up your sleeve?
Just that little memory I had of Soul Train and a singer from London named Junior a bunch of years ago, who had a big hit called Mama Used to Say. And I knew he was from London, but it was so weird when he showed up on Soul Train and Don Cornelius goes, hey, man, can you just talk a little bit to show us where you're from?
Now, talk to me a little bit so they can see that you don't sound in conversation anything like you sound on record. Where are you from, young man?
From London, England.
See? See that?
And everybody goes crazy. It's like, wow, it's an African-American dude, but he's not American. And he speaks with his British accent like Mary Poppins. Blow my mind. It was like the girls in the room just squeal.
Take your time, young man. Mama used to say.
All right.
Karaoke.
My time here is over.
Well, thanks for being in the studio with us. And... hopefully we'll get you again on the World in Words.
Let's do it real soon.
Okay. Patrick, you stick around.
Okay. Oh, yeah. More humiliation.
I was curious, why does it seem easier to sing in a different accent than your own? So I called up sociolinguist Bill Beeman from the University of Minnesota. He also happens to be a professional opera singer. He's a bass.
Oh,
I have to sing in four different languages, in French, in German, in Italian, and also Russian.
Bill also happens to speak these four languages, but many opera singers aren't fluent in the languages which they sing. They're just really good at imitating the sounds.
Well, if you're singing at a professional level and you can't sing Italian in a way that's correct, the Italians will boo you and they'll throw things. They're very, very sensitive about correct pronunciation of Italian. And in Germany, if you are going to be hired in a German opera house, you have to be able to speak and sing in unaccented German. That's how the contracts read.
What about singing seems to make changing your accent kind of almost easier? Or am I wrong?
No, you're quite right. And there are two factors that are really important. First of all, singing is all about vowels. Language altogether is really vowels that are interrupted by consonants. Although there are some things that you have to be careful of when you're singing consonants, generally, it's the vowels that really matter. American vowels are very special. They are almost always diphthongs. That is not pure. So Italians who are singing pop songs in English have to learn how to diphthongize their vowels. Just like opera singers, when they're singing Italian and coming from the United States, they have to learn to undiphthong their vowels so that they're pure.
Can you give me an example of that?
If I were singing, for instance, an Italian song with an American accent, I would say, "Io amo te," something like that. And of course, that doesn't work. It's "Io amo te." And you have to not make the vowel pure. Same thing, an Italian singer singing in English would not say, "I love you."
Right.
He should say, "I love you," with the proper American accent. So you learn to concentrate on the vowels, and that's how you end up singing in the correct style.
But is there something about the music or musicality that allows us to kind of adapt or our ears to tune into the accent? Because I know singing is from a different part of the brain, is that right? Rather than speaking.
Music is generally produced with the right brain. Speech is produced with the left brain. What this means is that it's actually somewhat easier to produce sounds that are going to be acceptable in a particular vocal style when we sing than when we speak. So we have people who stutter or people who have Tourette's syndrome. And when they sing, these symptoms completely disappear. In fact, that's one of the important therapies that people use for speech pathologies. This is certainly true with singing. After all, vowels are just sustained sounds. When you're singing, you can lock into a particular vowel, and then you can sustain it for the length of the note. You can train vowel by vowel, word by word, until the text comes out correctly.
Oh, yeah, that's really interesting. You know, there's a real technique to this, but I wonder why it is that singers sometimes do that, right? Why do they choose to do that?
Right. Beyond the mechanics, there is like deeper sociological reasons about why we're doing this and how we're doing this and how it sometimes succeeds and sometimes doesn't. And I spoke to another musician, Jane Setter, about why we so easily take on different accents when we sing. And she also happens to be a phonetics expert at the University of Reading in the UK.
Listening to myself singing is interesting. If you hear a recording of yourself singing, you think, oh, I didn't know I did that. So this whole business about whether people are singing in different accents is quite interesting, I think, because you wonder why you've learned something a particular way.
Singing in one particular accent or another is no different than playing in one musical style or another, says Setter.
Playing a guitar in a particular style, why do people adopt a blues style or a thrash style or, you know, kind of twiddly progressive rocky style? And I'm a big fan of progressive rock, so I'm not saying that in a nasty way. But, you know, why you've got all these different styles of playing guitar. Well, why not just have different styles of singing? And it sort of fits in with the genre that you're trying to fit in with. I mean, with me, when I was kind of singing along with things in the car when I was little, because my dad used to put cassettes on and you know, we'd be driving up the motorway and we'd all be singing along. Mm. And we used to listen to Tammy Wynette, and they always used to laugh because I'd sort of put on this country and western type accent when I was singing it. And I was just copying what she was doing. So, she's not going, stand by your man. She's going, stand by your man. You know, that's how it sounds. So that was what I was doing. And I think it's wanting to sound like the person who's singing the song because you like the song and you're enjoying the song. And then with ABBA, of course, they're Swedish. Mm-hmm. So every so often we'd be going up the motorway singing ABBA and there'd be one or two things which don't quite sound English that crop up, and I'd sort of be doing that and I'd be playing with it and things like this. It's very, very, very few times when that happens.
In some situations, it's perfectly acceptable and sort of accepted. Like, for example, the Rolling Stones singing like they're Americans. I don't think that they got a ton of backlash. I could be wrong about that for like the accent that they affected when they were singing. It was sort of part of the musical genre. But then I wonder if you can explain what happened with Alicia Dixon.
Okay, so she was part of a band called Mystique. Mystique is kind of rhythm and blues, garage sort of thing. And she went solo. She got particularly well known because she won Strictly Come Dancing in the UK.
Is that like a reality TV show?
It's Dancing with the Stars. Do you have Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah, we do have Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the British Dancing with the Stars. So she won this and she was phenomenal on it, really, really good. And this kind of made her very well known in Britain. But the bottom line is that she's from this rhythm and blues soul type background. And she was invited to sing the national anthem at the British Grand Prix. And she sang it. She sang it in the kind of soul R&B style because she's a soul R&B singer. If you wanted Sex Pistols to do it, you would have
been very different.
And along, and he would have done it in his style. So she did it in that style.
Send her victorious.
People actually complained that she'd sung it in an American accent.
Really?
And when you listen to it, she hadn't really sung it in an American accent. I think there was one vowel and it was God. And if you sing the word God on a sustained note, the main difference between the British and the American pronunciation of the vowel in God is that in British English you have rounded lips, but in American English you don't have rounded lips in standard type accents. Mm-hmm. So in British English it's God, in American English it's God. It's a very, very similar vowel except for the lip rounding. She sang that word on a sustained note.
God save our queen.
And there wasn't much lip rounding, and that's quite possibly might be to do with it being on a sustained note. But that was the only thing I could hear that really sounded particularly American. She wasn't singing in with an erotic accent or anything like this. Mm. But it was just interesting to see that people complained about it. And I think they complained about it because the style of music that she sang it from is actually an American style of music. It's not a British style of music. So it's not like Britpop or Merseybeat or British punk. It's an American influence type music, and I think that was why people thought she sang it in American accent, but actually she didn't.
But it created quite a hubbub. There were a lot of people super angry about the GAD.
Well, you know, but why? Save why the Queen. Would you? Why would you have this person come on and sing in an American accent when it's the British Grand Prix? It was that kind of thing. So yeah, people did complain about it and were upset about it. I mean, I think it was pretty much water off a duck's back to her, really. But to create that kind of furore over something as small as that, and she sang it really beautifully. I didn't think she sang it badly at all. But it wasn't whether she'd sung it well or not. It was whether she was singing it in an American style that seemed to be the problem.
Yeah, Nina, the style thing seems to be as much as the language. Yes, that God is totally American.
Very American.
But it's like the style of the music. Culture got all mixed in with the language, and maybe people heard an American accent all the way through, whereas in fact the accent was only just in that one spot. But what they were really hearing was the style and the culture. And in so many of these cases, it seems like the language gets blamed, right? You blame the language, or you assume that there's something inherent in the language that is making the difference. But in fact, it isn't. It's all of the paraphernalia around the language.
When popular music started in the, let's say, kind of 50s, it came out of the rhythm and blues type blues music tradition, which was an American thing. And so when you start getting the big stars who are singing this kind of popular music, it's people like Elvis Presley in the 50s, for example, and people want to emulate him and emulate his success.
Except emulating the King's American accent wasn't always successful, according to Setter. Take the quote British Elvis Cliff Richard of Cliff Richard and the Shadows. Richard is almost overeager in his desire to sing American. He's big on that final rhotic R that Americans use. Anyway, Richard is trying so hard to sound like Elvis that he actually adds R's onto words that Americans would never add an R to. Listen to the way that he sings Ma and Pa in his 1961 hit, A Girl Like You.
Tell your ma, tell your pa, and tell your favorite old wishing star.
No American singer would ever say Mar and Par.
There wouldn't have been an R, because
right.
They're hyper-correcting, you know.
Totally so, wrong.
You know, it's just completely wrong. But he was to fit in with that genre, because that was what was popular. That's what the British singers wanted to sound like in the 50s. And it wasn't until we started getting acts like the Beatles, etc., that we started hearing a really British voice in popular music.
Jane Senner, linguist and rocker. You can hear her and her band playing covers at pubs a half-hour train ride from London in Reading. Sounding British and American and somewhere mid-Atlantic. So, Patrick, do you say mar and par?
If it was grandma or grandpa, right, we say that. We don't say mar, we don't say par. We just don't say that. He totally overdoes it.
So, Patrick, Jane alluded to something that I think you are also talking about, which is authenticity and the fact that singing in one accent or another isn't a neutral choice. And I feel like you can't talk about singing with an accent without pointing out the fact that Cliff Richard and Elvis and most popular music as we know it has taken linguistic cues from African-American artists throughout history.
I mean, we can go back to jazz with artists such as Benny Goodman, who became known as the King of Swing, even though in most respects, Duke Ellington could be considered the King of Swing, black artist Duke Ellington.
Langston Wilkins is an ethnomusicologist at Indiana University.
We can move into the 1950s. With the rise of cover records, which was the practice of white artists remaking previously released songs that were originally recorded and released by black artists. The point was to market these songs among white teenagers.
Like what? Do you have examples of that?
Little Richard's Tutti Frutti was later remade by Pat Boone. Elvis Presley did cover records. Hound Dog was originally recorded by Big Mama Thornton.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
More popularized by Elvis Presley. But we can also talk about the 1960s and 70s with the British Invasion, all of those artists from the Rolling Stones to the Beatles to Led Zeppelin who were heavily inspired by black blues music in terms of vocals and instrumentals. We can also talk about hip-hop culture from the Beastie Boys to Eminem, I guess most notoriously Vanilla Ice. So yeah, there's a long history of white artists being able to profit off of styles that emerge out of the black community and the black experience.
Like Snow, the Canadian artist that I played at the beginning of the podcast who sings with the Jamaican patois, he grew up in Toronto, but he's keenly aware of being a white man with no ties to Jamaica adopting a Jamaican accent. In fact, here's a clip from a radio interview with Snow done in Jamaica. The DJ asked him why, essentially, he seems to be accepted by Jamaicans and not criticized for imitating a Jamaican accent.
In my neighborhood, where I grew up, I grew up in a place where it was mostly all Irish. Mm-hmm. And then all, like a lot of Jamaicans and Trinidadians started moving into the neighborhood and they brought the reggae. So I got the love from them from day one. It was because that's, it was like, since I was 13, it was just like my family, everybody, you know what I mean? It was just like that. But when I came out with Inform, I still haven't come to Jamaica yet. So I'm like, oh no,
you were expecting something completely different. You like the response. You were expecting something different.
I was hoping for what I got. Oh. But I was nervous. I was like, oh no, I don't know if they like me. You know what I mean?
But in the same Snow interview, the DJ brings up someone in the hip hop world whose imitation accent is not so loved. Australian rapper Iggy Azalea.
We see you here and like Jamaican people, like, they readily accept you with open arms. And like in US you have this controversy with Iggy Azalea where people kind of have her off because she's this Australian girl. She talks Australian, but yet still she raps in this dirty South.
Yeah.
Down South accent, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People have issue
with the way she sings because Iggy is, yes, a white woman from Australia who sings with, yes, a black Southern female accent.
First things first, I'm the realest.
Realest.
Drop this and let the whole world feel it.
Let them feel it.
And I'm still in the murder business. I can hold you down like I'm giving lessons in physics.
Right, right.
Iggy's speaking voice is wholly different. Here's a clip from a TV interview.
I grew up in Australia in a place called Mullumbimby. And it's a small town. The population is 3,000 now.
I wanted to escape to America, and that was when I was 16. And then I moved to Miami and spent the rest of my years kind of wandering around America.
Wow, so different. And it's kind of depressing, really. I mean, it's not like you often hear Australian music, right? And so when it comes out so un-Australian, that's kind of depressing.
I don't know, or I haven't read exactly what Australian artists are saying about her in the moment, but a decade ago, before Iggy began wandering around America, as she says, rapping in a fake, exaggerated Southern black female accent, Australian artists were criticizing the American accent. So back in 2004 at an Australian music award show, the hip-hop group Coolism, they're an Australian group, took the stage to accept an award. And in their acceptance speech, they took a big dig at the American accent.
We'd like to accept this on behalf of the whole Australian hip-hop community. We're trying to build this foundation and mnemonic ascent. All the Australians that keep it real, for want of a better phrase, be yourselves. Enough of that American wannabe trash. I'm talking about Australians that want to be something that they're not. That sucks.
That was 10 years ago. But Iggy Azalea didn't seem to have heard Coolism's quip. Though I wonder if she was rapping in her native accent, if her star would have risen as high as it has. In 2014, her debut album, The New Classic, was wildly successful. Her single Fancy topped the charts for, I think, 7 weeks. And this spotlight and success has called into question her appropriation of African-American vernacular English and what many have called Black Scent. Like rappers Eve and Jill Scott, they spoke about her fake accent on Sway Calloway's radio show Shade 45.
You feel like her music is, or the, music
the
in
tone,
general.
The black scent.
Yeah, but
is that horrible? No, that's not horrible.
I'm just saying, listen, a lot of people are going to get mad about that, whatever, say what you want, but I'm just saying it in the sense that it would be, she's from a different place. And yeah. I would, and I've said this before, it would be dope to hear her with her swag. What are you? Who are you? What is that? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's the only reason why I say that.
I've spent time with her, in Australia.
Because I think, exactly.
They're fresh.
They're so
they
dope.
They are dope.
I love
Australia. To MCs.
To fashion.
Mm-hmm. They have it.
They're dope. And so that's my only thing about it, period. Like, I think she's fly. I think she's good to look at. You know, I think she's a pretty girl. She got a dope body. Like, all of that's fine. I just wish it was a little more of possibly inserting where she came from.
Voice is so particular. You know, it's so tied to the particularities of culture. You know, so for her to use an accent, it's totally offensive to black female artists who toiled in the industry for years, you know, who struggled against patriarchy and sexism and misogyny. You know, to disseminate their art. It's offensive to kind of steal their voice.
Again, ethnomusicologist Langston Wilkins. Today, it seems people listen to the Rolling Stones, they're not immediately offended, but like when you listen to Iggy Azalea, it is immediately assaulting to your ears and to your sensibilities. I feel like, I don't know, I was listening to her over and over again this past week, and it seems even more inauthentic every time you hear her. And yet I listen to the Rolling Stones and I don't feel the same way. And I'm wondering, is there something different about her than the others?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, you know, we've been, I guess I don't want to use the word conditioned, but I can't think of a better one. We've been conditioned to accept the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and Led Zeppelin's appropriation of black styles. But at the same time, you know, the Rolling Stones are one of the greatest rock bands of all time. You know, that's true of the Beatles and Led Zeppelin, Cream and others. They were innovative. They weren't just, you know, taking black voice or black sounds and putting it on. You know, they borrowed heavily from the culture and then innovated with the materials they borrowed. Whereas Iggy Azalea, I don't believe she's innovative. I don't hear imagination nor creativity in her music. You know, I hear simply mockery. I hear thievery. You know, I hear simply her deciding what hip hop is and just simply going out and performing it, not being creative with it. So I think the innovation of earlier white artists such as Rolling Stones and the Beatles and such allowed them to kind of evade some of the criticisms that Iggy Azalea has received.
Don't fake the funk is a phrase that I read repeatedly in reference to Iggy Azalea. When it comes down to it, yes, she has appropriated an accent without seemingly much reverence for the voices of Black female rappers who have struggled to be heard. But worse yet, she has faked the funk to do so, riding white privilege up the charts. And this is the crux of the issue, says Wilkins, not the sheer act of borrowing and sampling.
Art is created by listening and engaging with other people's art. And so it's not wrong that Mick Jagger shaped and developed his stage performance style based on what he saw from Tina Turner. You know, I think that's totally fair. And we need that in our society. You know, we need to learn from others. But the inequality is unfair. White privilege is what makes appropriation wrong. So if we could, you know, make the music industry much more fair in terms of commercial, you know, performance, then I think these issues of appropriation would lessen.
The moment that rappers like Eve and Jill Scott get the same opportunity that Iggy Azalea does is the moment that maybe Iggy Azalea can speak like Jill and Jill Scott and Eve.
Exactly.
Don't fake the funk. Enough said. Cliff Richard, definitely fake the funk. All those opera singers with bad Italian accents getting booed off stage, faking the funk. Iggy Azalea, faking the funk. Me, singing any Oasis song at a karaoke bar. Okay, so you get the point.
Yeah, but like everything's faking, right? We're all faking all the time. Creativity is an act of fakery. But if we do it well enough and we add something.
Hopefully we're not faking the podcast funk.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I certainly am faking the funk on a weekly basis.
Me too. That's all for this week. Catch us on Twitter. The podcast has its own Twitter account now, at LingoPod, LingoPod. I'm at Porzuki, PORZUCKI. And Patrick, where you at?
Patrick Cox, PATRICOX.
As always, thanks for listening.
Oh, yeah, Nina. So that song that you played at the beginning, right?
Yeah,
that,
we don't need the English.
We don't need the English?
We don't need the English.
I really wasn't insulted. Not at all. Not even slightly. In fact, I wish there was a little bit more of that in American culture. This song, was this a response to that great Clash song, I'm So Bored with the USA?
I don't know. It came out in 1979. The Clash song is 1977.
77, right. Yeah, yeah.
So you're going to take us out with I'm So Bored of the USA. It's fitting.
Soundworks.
Soundworks
from PRI.